What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the program. It is episode 373 of Not Your Average Boston Sports Podcast. I am your host, Garrett Hayden. As always, you can listen to the program on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And you can follow along with our social pages on Facebook and X for the latest updates. Good to be back this week. Good to be back, regularly doing the pod. It was nice to kind of get back to the regular schedule last week. So great to be back with you guys on this Monday. A lot to get to with the local teams. Patriots have hired a new coach, so obviously we're going to be focused on that a lot today. But before we get going, we'd like to say, again, thank you to everybody that submitted mailbag questions last week. Really was a good episode, a lot of good questions. So I really appreciated that. So looking forward to today's episode. We also have a listener-inspired top five at the end of today's podcast. I'm looking forward to that. So we'll get to that later. But I think, it makes the most sense for us to start with the Patriots again, where we started last week. And obviously, a lot has changed very quickly with this football team in regards to, in regards to coaching. So, within the last week, the Patriots have, played their final regular season game, fired their head coach, hours after the game, ran a coaching search, whether you want to say if it was a legitimate search or not. I mean, whatever your opinions are, I think they're all kind of valid. I think any opinion is pretty valid with, the way that they ran the search, but ran the search, found their guy, and have hired a new coach. And now, Monday morning, here we are a week from last week's podcast, and the Patriots have a new coach. So, Mike Vrabel, obviously, news yesterday morning that he's been hired as the new coach of the Patriots. Multi-year contract, I'm not sure what the details are in terms of how many years. But, the news is that, he's here, and I think it really should not come as a surprise to anybody. I think honestly, the fact that he was available, I think tells you a lot about, this kind of how this whole thing went down, and I was talking to somebody last night and they kind of, asked me about if Mike Vrabel wasn't available, would the Patriots still have fired Gerard Mayo? And I think that that's, an interesting point. I still think that he gets fired. I think that, I think Gerard Mayo still gets fired, but it might be that the coaching search takes a little bit longer. I think that would be the only difference. But the fact that Mike Vrabel was available, was interviewing with other teams, I think it just kind of, the Patriots wanted to do whatever it was necessary to bring him in. And so, honestly, if you have an opinion that the Patriots kind of rushed through this coaching search, I'm not going to disagree with you, honestly. I'm not really going to disagree with, any kind of takes about the Rooney Rule and the Patriots, interviewing a couple of minority candidates. But, I think that that rule in and of itself is kind of, I think it's set up to be a positive, but it's not really utilized that way, unfortunately. And I think, you can have a thought about that. I think, though, that this particular situation is about Mike Vrabel and him being available. I think that if he wasn't, this might be kind of a different, interview process and whatnot. But I think the fact that he was available, it kind of was, to me, and I think to most people, it's like, it's a move that makes too much sense. And it's, it is too bad that that rule is kind of a sham, basically, and the Patriots kind of took advantage of that, which isn't great. But I will say that, they're not the only team that does it that way, unfortunately. And I do think that, it's difficult because I don't want to, sit up here and sound pretentious to be like, oh, there's got to be a better way to do it. But I don't have an alternative, plan to be like, okay, there needs to be a better way to, have a better hiring process for, minority candidates. And it's just, for this particular rule, it just doesn't work because it doesn't seem like any teams really kind of take it seriously, that it's kind of just like, okay, it's just a way to fill out a requirement, and that's kind of disappointing. So, I think any of those kind of opinions about that sort of thing, like, I think any of them are valid. But I think for the Patriots, it was, kind of an easy decision, with Vrabel, being a guy that's very experienced, obviously, as coach the Titans for 6 years, former player, familiar with the Patriots organization, and that sort of thing. So it kind of made a lot of sense. I think now I'm curious about, once they've hired him, who are they bringing in terms of coaches, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, other coaches, assuming that the team is completely going to clean house, which that's what I kind of assume. And so a lot of candidates that you could look at to, run the offense or run the defense or, what have you. So, I think for me, I like the hire, the circumstances of it getting done as quickly as it did. It's not, I don't feel great about it, but I do think that it's probably the best candidate. There's really nobody else that they could have gotten that would make me feel a lot better about kind of where the team needs to go. Now, obviously, a coach doesn't change the roster. A coach doesn't change a lot. I mean, maybe it does, but I think it's like, does depend a lot on how they're going to be able to, go through this offseason. And it'd be interesting to see how aggressive they are in terms of trying to beef up the roster. The number four pick, all the cap space they have. It is a huge offseason, opportunity to try to get this team back on track and, really try to move forward into kind of this new era. And I think, like, a lot of us definitely need to be patient, and understand that, just because they hire Mike Vrabel and it's a perfect fit, I think, for some people, it's not just going to happen overnight. Like, they're not going to be the Commanders and win 12 games next year. I'll be the first person to tell you that that is unlikely to happen. So I think it's just understanding that it will be a process. And, I think for me, it's a little frustrating because it does seem like it could have been better for this team if they hired him last year. I think they already had the succession plan in place for Jerod Mayo. And I think maybe I was wrong about that I thought that Mayo was going to be a lot more prepared than he was. And I thought that the team in the front office kind of knew what they were doing. Clearly they didn't. And I think they kind of get this do-over mulligan, but it's like, I don't think Kraft really deserves credit for this because it's like he kind of, his own ego, I think, had made this situation worse in terms of just being so sure that Mayo is going to be the guy. And I don't know. I have a problem with people like giving him credit for this thing to, realize he made a mistake. Yeah, but it's like, the mistake is, I don't know. I don't want to make a whole podcast about it, but I wouldn't really give him credit for a move that kind of had to be made and kind of should have been made last year. So, that's just kind of my opinion, but I think with hiring Mike Vrabel, it's a no-nonsense, hard-nosed coach that, is going to, I believe that he's going to do a better job of setting a culture of accountability and, no-nonsense, which is like, didn't really feel like there was any kind of culture this past year. And it seemed like, I don't know, it just was strange with, players talking to the media a lot more kind of media missteps than you're kind of used to with most Patriot teams. So I hope that they kind of get back to being kind of more professional. I think that it's going to be like holding guys more accountable, which is, I think, exactly what this team needs. And, I think just personnel wise and kind of style wise, he's going to be a coach that or a coach, and they're going to be an organization that prioritizes strength in the trenches, offensive and defensive line, because I think that's going to be the quickest way for this Patriots team to kind of get back to being competitive. Because I think if you build a good, solid offensive line, you know, then it helps your running game, helps your pass protection. And I think it can help elevate Drake May and elevate your receiving corps even more if you have an offensive line that's, you know, that's solid. A solid offensive line can get you very far in this league. And I also think a defensive line that's going to be more consistent against the run, rushing the passer. Because I do think that, like, as much as the Patriots have got issues against the pass this year, you have a guy back there in Christian Gonzalez. You get another piece, you can feel, like, I think, decent about their secondary. And if you can get some guys that can make that pass rush a little bit more consistent, I think it, you know, is going to work wonders for your defense. So I think that's going to be an area. Those are two areas that I think should improve under Mike Vrabel. They're going to make an effort to improve those areas. You know, I think as far as bringing in the coaches to coach the offense, I think I've heard plenty of different names. You know, Wes Welker would be a name that I'd be interested in. Obviously, he, you know, former player here, has coached with the Dolphins, 49ers, and the Texans, overlapped with Mike Vrabel 1 year in Houston. So I think he might be a name to watch in terms of offensive coordinator or wide receivers coach or something like that. You know, Josh McDaniels certainly is a name to watch. Wouldn't be surprised if he comes back. Tommy Reeves would be another name that I wouldn't be surprised. He worked with Vrabel in Cleveland last year, has worked at Alabama and Notre Dame. So I feel like that could, he could be an interesting name. Josh McCown as well, who I think recently has gotten into coaching the last 2 years, and worked with Drake May in high school. So he could be a possibility as somebody to bring in. You know, defensively, kind of not sure there. You know, I don't think DeMarcus Covington comes back. I think that the Patriots are going to bring in somebody different. You know, so I think there definitely could be a lot of changes. And I wouldn't be surprised if they happen quickly, like this week. So I think that there's a press conference today, later this afternoon. So certainly that will kind of be interesting to watch in terms of, you know, the things that, that Vrabel says. Maybe he alludes to anything in terms of, you know, coaching changes. I guess I'd be surprised, but you never know. You know, I also think the front office structure could change as well. You know, there's a possibility that, you know, Vrabel wants to bring in his own guys, which I think would make sense. You know, I'm not, you know, based on the last offseason, I think that they're kind of left a lot to be desired in terms of the Patriots, you know, higher up decision making. There seemed to be more collaboration than usual. And, you know, I don't think, jury is still out on last year's draft. I think there are guys that struggled, but I also think, like, 1 year, you never know. You never know if it changes. You never know if you can get more consistency from some of those guys. But I do think that there is definitely a good chance that you're going to see a lot of change in the coaching in the front office. And, you know, obviously there are going to be a lot of new players coming in this season, this offseason as well, with the draft and how much money you have in cap space, that I think the Patriots are certainly going to be trying to do everything they can to kind of overhaul this entire roster that frankly needs it. So I think it's a good hire. I really think that there was nobody else that was going to be as good of a hire. I mean, my own personal opinion is, I talked about in the mailbag, I think Brian Flores would have also been an amazing hire as well. The Patriots didn't extend or didn't offer an interview to him, which I thought was weird. But it's just, like, kind of tells you again that Mike Vrabel really was their guy, is the only guy that they wanted to hire. You know, and again, you can have your own opinions about the hiring process, and kind of was a little weird, but I think it kind of was a move that made sense. You know, there's really no other way to look at it. I mean, I think it's good that I think people are excited It seems like, but I think, one of the things for me is I'm hoping that this organization can kind of be less of a collaborative organization, because I feel like that's what's happened the last couple of years, and the team's performance has not been as good. Not saying that it's like, oh, there just needs to be one person making all the decisions, but it's like, kind of feel like it operated a little bit better that way when there was, I don't want to say collaboration is a bad thing, but it's like you need to be able to kind of have somebody that's going to make, decisions and be able to stick with them. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens, the next couple of weeks with coaches coming and go or coaches coming and going, and if there's a change in the front office structure. Really wouldn't be surprised if there was. So, I think, obviously keep you updated as things change, and things probably will change this week. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some big things that happen. So, we'll probably get to those next week. But I think it's probably going to do it for the Patriots. Any more Patriots stuff, we'll see what happens. So I think we're going to move on, talk a little Celtics. We're coming off a close call last night against the New Orleans Pelicans. A 120 to 119 win, and definitely a game that was a little scary. Coming into this, the Pelicans are a team, obviously, look at their record, 8-31. They've been a bad team this year, but have also had a number of players that have missed a lot of time. I believe that last night was the first game that the trio of, I think it was like the trio of Zion, DeJounte Murray, and Trey Murphy. That was the first time that they played together all season long. Brandon Ingram has obviously been hurt for a majority of the season as well. A very strange team that they're 8-32, but it's like you look at that team, you watch them last night, they're a pretty talented team. So it's kind of like coming into that game, you look at the record and you're like, oh, the Celtics should win easily. They should beat them by 40 points. And the Pelicans did not really oblige, made it really difficult for the Celtics. I also think that part of the reason this game was close, the shot 46% from three. They're one of the, if not the worst, three-point shooting team in the league. So I think the fact that they were able to make this close was because of their three-point shooting. Celtics also had some high turnover, 11 turnovers in this game. And I think, Pelicans able to keep themselves in the game thanks to some good shooting, especially from Trey Murphy. Made five threes. DeJounte Murray always seems to go off against the Celtics at 26 points, 9 rebounds, and 8 assists. So definitely a tough one for the Celtics, but, persevered, able to get the defensive stop. McCollum misses the shot at the buzzer, would have won the game. It was kind of a weird finish because the Celtics looked like they were going to come away with the win. Derek White making some free throws. Jason Tatum then missed a couple free throws. Pelicans get it to within one, and then the Celtics called for a 5 second violation, which felt like it was a little quick, a little like a quicker 5 seconds than I would have imagined. They don't give Derek White the timeout. And then Pelicans get the ball, get that chance to win the game. So, I think this Celtics team still a little bit uneven. I think that obviously coming off that road trip was great. Getting the win against Denver minus Jokic. I know it was minus Jokic, but still for that team to win that game, I think was huge with the 15-0 run in the fourth quarter. And then kind of obviously came back down to earth on Friday against the Kings, got absolutely dominated on the glass. Sabonis is one of the best players in the league that people don't know about, at almost 30 rebounds in that game. That's why he was one of the guys that I had said in the mailbag last week that he's one of the guys I would build around. Just an unbelievable offensive player, unbelievable rebounder. So, Celtics got smoked in the fourth quarter. I think it was like 38 to 21, they got outscored. So I think important for them to get a win. You know, I do know that, like, no matter what teams they play night in and night out, every game is going to be different. Every game is going to bring a different challenge. The Pelicans, I think, one of those teams that I think clearly playing the Celtics motivated them, and I think motivated them to, have a better offensive game, and play finally with like almost the whole roster healthy. It's been a pretty ridiculous season for the Pelicans that they have had guys hurt like almost the entire season. So it's crazy when, there was that thing of like Williamson, Murray, and Murphy all playing together in the same game for the first time all season, and they played 39 games. So, I think definitely that's a team that you'd look at that record and you think, okay, worst team in the league, but it's like talent-wise, they're certainly not. Like, I think Zion Williamson's still obviously a very good player. McCollum has kind of struggled this year, but Murray's a really good player. Trey Murphy has been, I think, one of the best players in the league the last couple of years in terms of his like improvement. So I'm not surprised that this got close, but I think for the Celtics, should be kind of a wake-up call game in terms of, okay, the late game execution was not exactly where it needed to be, and they kind of got lucky. I think a good game for Tatum, getting to the line, 10 free throw attempts, didn't shoot great from three, attempted 30 shots, getting 38 points on 30 shots is not the most efficient, but I think the Celtics are still trying to find way, or not find ways, but they're still getting used to working Porzingis back into the lineup. At 19 points, 11 rebounds, I think he's played better the last couple of games. Shooting wise wasn't great, 7 for 19 last night, but I think they continue to work him into the lineup, and I think it's just going to get better. Three blocks, I think he was good defensively last night, so I think it's just continuing to kind of get him into the rhythm of being in the lineup. The Celtics are still, working through having him on the floor while they have Tatum and Brown trying to be more aggressive. So, I think it was nice to see Jaylen Brown last night. Didn't have a great game in terms of shooting the ball and offensively, but had 8 rebounds, had 7 assists, and I think made some big plays in the first half. It's nice to see Horford make some shots off the bench. Seems like he had been struggling from three, but he made 3 of them last night. Peyton Pritchard was good at 11 points off the bench. Cornette was solid in his minutes, 14 minutes, 8 points, and 7 rebounds. So I think this is a team that, as we kind of talked about last week, still, going through kind of the dog days of the season, if you will, where, they're still a ways away from the trade deadline, a ways away from the All-Star break, and it's kind of, a difficult part of the season. But I think, continuing to work Porzingis back into the lineup is something that they want to continue to try to do. And so I think it was nice to see him show a little bit more of defensive improvement, because that's an area that the Celtics need to continue to be better at, the interior defense and, defending the three. The Pelicans obviously made 17 threes last night, which is ridiculous when you consider that they're one of the worst three-point shooting teams in the league. But I do think the Celtics have to continue to, or try to find that level defensively of focus and intensity. And I know it's hard to do that every single night, but I think if this Celtics team starts doing that, starts kind of setting the tone physically, as we talked about last week, then I think they're going to be able to kind of get back on track, so to speak. I'm not totally concerned about where they're at, because I think it's long season. We're 39 games in, we're almost halfway through. Halfway point will be Friday night against the Magic, which I think will be a really good measuring stick kind of game. So they're on the road in Toronto on Wednesday. Then they got a home back-to-back against the Magic and the Hawks. And then MLK Day, they have a 5 o'clock game against the Warriors, which should be interesting. So that's going to be the next couple of games. Probably we'll be doing our next episode Tuesday next week, as I have some plans on Monday, but it'll be interesting to kind of see where they're at after they play a couple of pretty solid teams in the Magic, and the Warriors and the Hawks team that it's not the best team, but they always seem to give the Celtics some issues. So I think it'll be good to see how they do in those particular games. I think continuing to get some solid, bench scoring is important. I think they got a pretty good bench performance last night, as they, my math is correct, I think, had about 30 points. 33 points. They had 33 points off the bench. Pritchard Hauser, or Pritchard and Horford, excuse me, both had 11. Cornette had 8. Sam Hauser had a 3. So it's like, I think I'm curious about the bench scoring the next couple of games. Like, it's not always going to be that consistent, but I think that was a big reason why they were able to win last night, as they outscored the Pelicans bench. Okay, well, actually, not that crazy, but 33 to 27. So, got a lot of bench points. I think that's part of the reason why they were able to win. But hopefully, they just kind of take this game as a lesson as they move forward in the season, because, they're probably going to be more games like that where they play a team that, is really motivated to play them and motivated to, play that way against the defending champs. So, I think it'll be an interesting stretch of four games this week, in Toronto, and then back to back at home against the Magic and the Hawks, and then on the road to start a West Coast trip in San Francisco when they play the Warriors, and then the rest of that trip a back to back in LA against the Clippers and the Lakers, and then they will play the Mavericks. So interesting kind of finals rematch there, and then they'll actually play the Mavericks again in a couple weeks on February 6th. So I think for the Celtics, that's probably going to do it. I'm very curious how they play the next couple of weeks, but good to see that they were able to, get a win last night any way you can. It's always good to get a win. So we'll see if they can keep the momentum going with some interesting games this week. So I think that's going to do it for the Celtics. Going to get to some Bruins, unfortunately. There's really not much Red Sox or Revolution stuff. So we'll do Bruins, and then we'll get into the other sports stuff. So Bruins snapping their six-game losing streak on Saturday with a 4-3 win over the Florida Panthers. Really good to see the Bruins get a win in this game. Really felt like a cathartic kind of game, and a game that I think honestly they really needed to have. I think with the losses starting to pile up, obviously they were blanked by the Oilers last week, 4-0 in Boston, and then lost to Tampa Bay 4-1 to continue the losing streak. But they finally got a ton. It was one of those games for sure. I think Jeremy Swayman, I think for the most part, was solid in this game. It was good to see the Bruins get a goal from Oliver Wahlstrom. Finally, see him get on the board. I think Pastrnak had a good game as well. There were a lot of guys that I think played well. Geeky had that early goal. I think for this particular team, winning that game, I think was really, really important. I think given some of the things that had come out in the media at the end of last week, which I don't really even want to address because I think it's complete nonsense and I think it's a non-story, so I'm really not even going to address it. But it was nice to see them get a win after all that, to kind of pull the guys together to be able to get that win. And it's just, it was tough to see this game go to the very end of the third period. Sam Reinhart gets the tying goal with less than 3 seconds left, And you're like, oh my God, that's a game that they lose. And great to see the Bruins get, after being on the bad end of a wacky goal, getting the benefit of the deflection in overtime. Pastrnak scoring with 1.2 seconds left to give them the win. Kind of wild that Sam Reinhart is the guy that scores the tying goal, then in overtime, can't get the puck out of the zone. Puck deflects off his stick and goes in for the winner. So just really kind of a wacky last couple minutes in Florida. But I think for the Bruins just to get a win and get a win against that team in particular, a team that's really kind of been their, Achilles heel in the last two postseasons. And just nice to see them get a win. Not a whole lot of like nasty in this game as much as I was expecting, which I think is good because I think for the Bruins, when you can play a focused game and get a win, that's much better than getting caught up in the nonsense that the Panthers are trying to get you into. So I think it's a good response, a good win on the road. Bruins haven't been great away from the Garden. They were, do the math, 8-12-2 away from the Garden prior to that game Saturday. So really important for them to get the win, snap the losing streak. I think that where they are in the standings, it's not great, as you have some teams in the Atlantic that are, breathing down your neck, so to speak. Detroit and Montreal are 3 points back of the Bruins, and Ottawa's 2 points back, and they're in fourth place. So it's not like this win is going to drastically change anything. I mean, you hope it does. You hope that it gives this team the shot in the arm that they do to get a win in overtime against a team that they've struggled against. But it's kind of just like, I'm not ready to say, oh, the Bruins are back because they won this game. It's like they're going to need to string some wins together and hope that they can, create some space between them and Ottawa and Detroit and Montreal as they're right behind them at this point. So, I think it's good to see David Pastrnak scoring some goals again. I think that that's a really key thing for this team, that if he's going and he's scoring goals, makes everybody else kind of feel a little bit better about their game. But still, like, this is a team that struggles to score. Still, this is a team that struggles on the power play. It was good to see Geeky get a power play goal in this game, but it's still a team that's filled with a lot of issues on special teams and a team that's struggling to score. I mean, I think that for the most part, Swayman has not really been himself this season, which doesn't surprise me, with missing the time at the beginning of the season, but it does seem like he's had some good games lately. I thought he played really, really well on Saturday. It's kind of too bad that they weren't able to hold on and win in regulation, but still thought he was really good. So I think hopefully this is a springboard. But honestly, like, based on the things that we've seen from this team this season, it's kind of hard for me to believe that, okay, this win is just going to change the way that they play and change the team that they are, because you haven't really seen it consistently. So it will be very interesting to me how they come out early Tuesday night when they play Tampa Bay, another game that they really need to do well. It's weird that, like, you got Tampa Bay and then you got Ottawa on Saturday, and it's like, okay, an Ottawa team that is now kind of chasing you. You get two games against them in the next week or so that I think are going to be really important. Obviously, the Tampa Bay game, and then they have a date against New Jersey, so that'll be an interesting game next week. They got the Sharks at the Garden next week on MLK Day. I'll be lucky enough to be there, so be interesting to see, how that game goes. But I think, as I talked about, this stretch of Tampa Bay and Florida and division opponents, it's they're games that they're going to need to pick up points. There's not going to be a, close but no cigar type games. It's like you need to get 2 points. You need to start winning consistently. Because it's just like this time of year, points are at a premium. And I think it's really going to be a all-out sprint for the next month or so, I think, before the Four Nations, that they'll get a huge break. But I think you want to see if they can, build off of that win. Really would be great if the Bruins could rip off, four wins in five games or five out of six or something and use this game as a springboard. But it's difficult because it's like you looked at the way that they played, coming into the Christmas break, that they won four out of five, and then, won the second game against Columbus and then six straight losses. So I think it's just, you want them to be able to string wins together, and they just have not been able to do it. And it's not surprising considering the team that they have in terms of struggling to score and struggling on, special teams. But it's kind of just like you hope that win provides a shot in the arm, because it's like it does seem like they're kind of too stubborn to, call up any of their younger guys from Providence to help that scoring issue, that they're kind of just hoping that the team figures it out. And it's kind of a dangerous way of thinking. But, it's been good to see that there are certain guys that have been starting to play better lately. Morgan Geekie, I think, has been really good lately. But, they need a lot more. They need a lot more consistency from Trent Frederick and Charlie Coyle and the guys that, Elias Lindholm, and kind of the guys that they expect to be kind of some of their top players. And it just has been a little bit too inconsistent. And, I think defensively, still kind of waiting for Hampus Lindholm to come back. I think he is skating. Not sure how close he is to returning, but I do think that if they can get him back, may help kind of balance out their defense. And I think as their best offensive defenseman, may kind of help them be a little bit better special teams wise and maybe kind of help with some scoring. Not that he's going to score goals, but a guy that's going to kind of help make plays out of the defensive zone. So, I think, again, a good win, and a win that they needed for sure against that particular team. And, nice to get the win on the mom's trip too. I think good for them to kind of feel good about something. But, it's just, as we kind of talk about with the Celtics, it's a hard time of the year where, the motivation is, should be at an all-time high. But for some reason, it's not. Sometimes you see this team not play with a lot of effort. And that wasn't the case, Saturday. Wasn't the case Thursday. Like, I actually thought they played with some good energy, but just couldn't find the net. So I think that this game Tuesday is going to be very interesting. I do expect it to be a pretty highly emotional game after Mark Hastalic had the cross check to the face at the end of the game on Thursday. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some carryover against Tampa Bay on Tuesday at the Garden. But then the Bruins will have a couple more days off before they travel to Ottawa Saturday afternoon, and then they'll take on the Sharks and first overall pick Macklin Celebrini at the Garden a week from today. So that will be an interesting kind of game. But then the Bruins got some interesting games after that game. They got New Jersey, Ottawa again, Colorado. They'll play Winnipeg and then New York as they open the month of February. So I think some good opportunities for the Bruins to build off of these games. I'm hoping that they can find a little bit more offense, and hope that Jeremy Swayman continues to kind of find his footing. Has obviously got off to a rough start. I think statistically it's not great. The numbers don't look great, but I do think you've seen him make some bigger saves in the last couple of games. So hopefully he's kind of turned a corner. So we'll see what happens. Bruins Lightning tomorrow, 7 o'clock start at the Garden. So I think we're going to move on. We're going to talk some NFL as the wild card round is in the midst of going on, as we had games on Saturday, and then you had a couple or a number of games yesterday. So we'll go through some of the scores here. On Saturday, the Texans beat the Chargers 32-12. Justin Herbert throwing four interceptions. In this game, Texans, you know, defensively were good, took advantage of the mistakes. Joe Mixon had 106 yards and a touchdown. C.J. Stroud, 282 yards and a touchdown. So a lot of turnovers. You know, Texans kind of running away with this game in the second half, as it was 10-6 at halftime, and then Texans outscored the Chargers 22-6 in the second half. So the Texans get the win. And then Saturday night, the Ravens getting a great rushing, performance from Derrick Henry, 186 yards and two touchdowns. Lamar Jackson also had a couple passing touchdowns. Ravens beat the Steelers 28-14. Game was never really close. So with the Ravens' win, they will take on the Bills in the divisional round next weekend. The Texans will take on the Chiefs. Then the Bills beating the Broncos yesterday, 31-7, an early touchdown for the Broncos, but that's pretty much all they did well in this game. Josh Allen with two touchdown passes, James Cook with 120 yards and a touchdown, 31-7, the final score. The Eagles using some really good defense to beat the Packers yesterday, 22-10, Saquon Barkley, 119 yards rushing. I don't know if the Eagles really played great offensively in this game, but I do know that defensively they were great, three interceptions and a forced fumble, so good outing for them defensively. And then last night, the Commanders with a last-second field goal to beat the Buccaneers as the kick glanced off the upright and in. So Commanders get the win, their first playoff win since 2006. They beat the Buccaneers 23-20. So the Commanders will go on the road to play Detroit next week in the divisional round. And then obviously Vikings-Rams, the winner tonight, winner of tonight's game, will travel to Philadelphia to play the Eagles next weekend. So I kind of like Minnesota in this game. Rams are hosting the game, but the game is in Arizona because of the LA wildfires. So it'll be interesting to see how that game goes. For the Rams, I do think that possibility we could see a lot of points or very few, but I do kind of like Minnesota to win this game. So I expect that they win, but I do think that the Rams have a pretty good chance to win as well with their offense and Matthew Stafford. So some notes here, the Eagles losing N'Kobe Dean likely for the playoffs as he suffered a knee injury in yesterday's game and had to be carted off the field. And it's also reporting that Khalil Mack of the Chargers is set to be a free agent, but is also thinking about retirement as well. I think he's a pending free agent. Patriots should certainly be interested in his services if he does decide to return. So yeah, wildcard game, and then divisional round games next weekend. So you got the 4:30 game in Kansas City, Houston against the Chiefs, and then Washington against Detroit be the 8 o'clock game on Fox, and then Sunday at 6:30 if Baltimore and Buffalo, and then the 3 o'clock game next Sunday will be the Eagles against the winner of the Vikings and the Rams tonight. So I think that's going to do it for our NFL notes. We're going to take a look at some NBA here. The Clippers and the Lakers are expected to return to their home slate on Monday after being relocated after the, or having games postponed because of the wildfires. The Pacers ending the Cavaliers' 12-game winning streak yesterday. And Jalen Brunson had 44 points to lead the Knicks over the Bucks yesterday. So we'll take a look at some games on the schedule Tonight, 7 o'clock start. Minnesota and Washington. 7:30, Detroit and New York. Golden State and Toronto at 8 o'clock on NBA TV. Memphis and Houston. And then 10:30 on NBA TV, you have the Spurs and the Lakers. And then also at 10:30, the Heat and the Clippers. So I'll take a quick look at the standings. Celtics still well in second place, 5.5 games back of first place in the East. The Knicks behind them in third, 2.5 games back of the Celtics. Then the Magic are in fourth, Pacers in fifth, and then the Bucks are in sixth. And then the play-in spots, the Heat, the Pistons, the Hawks, and the Bulls, with the Sixers 2 games out of the play-in, the final play-in spot. In the Western Conference, Oklahoma City has continued to build a pretty big lead, 6.5 games over Houston for first place. Memphis is in third, followed by Denver, Dallas, and the Lakers. And then in the play-in spots, the Clippers, Timberwolves, Kings, and the Suns, with the Warriors, even with the Suns, but out of that final play-in spot. We'll take a look. Some NHL notes. Erik Staal, former Hurricane, and also played for Minnesota and Montreal and Florida, retired, or the Hurricanes retired his number 12 yesterday. Alex Ovechkin scoring goal number 873 is 22 away from the all-time scoring record, so definitely keep you updated as he gets closer to the record of 894. That would tie the record. So we'll take a look. Some games on the schedule tonight. 3 games on the schedule: Florida and Philadelphia at 7 o'clock, Calgary and Chicago at 7:30 on the NHL Network. It's also on Amazon as well. And then at 9:30, the Kings and the Oilers. So we'll take a look at the standings here. Toronto atop the Atlantic with 56 points, followed by Florida with 53, and then Tampa Bay with 49. In the Metro, Washington leads the division with 61 points, tied atop the entire NHL with 61 points, and then followed by the Devils with 56 and the Hurricanes with 55. In the wild card spots, the Bruins have the first wild card spot with 47 points, and then Columbus has that second spot with 46 points. Ottawa behind that second spot by 1 point. Detroit and Montreal and Pittsburgh behind that last spot by 2 points. So things are getting a little dicey for the Bruins right now. So we'll see if they can get back on track in the Central and the West. Winnipeg leads with 61 points, followed by Minnesota with 58, Dallas with 55, and then in the Pacific Division, Vegas leads with 61 points, followed by Edmonton with 55 and Los Angeles with 53. In the wild card spots, Avalanche with 53 points and the Canucks with 48 points. In that second spot, the Flames a point behind Vancouver for that final playoff spot. So we'll take a look at some MLB notes. Jeff Hoffman and the Jays was an all-star last year, agreeing to a 3-year deal with Toronto. Colin Ree agreeing to a contract with the Cubs. And the MLB fans who grabbed Mookie Betts in the World Series, both of those fans have been banned. So, I guess that's news. Not really a whole lot of baseball stuff going on in terms of free agent stuff. But we'll certainly keep you updated with any Red Sox news. So I think it's probably going to do it for the sports this week. I'm gonna now do our top five this week, which is a sports football themed. Shout out to Sam Brown, who wanted me to do this. He texted me last week and wanted me to do a, playoff quarterback rankings, and I told him that I do a top five remaining quarterbacks in the playoffs. So, Sam, hopefully this is a good list for you. Hopefully it's interesting for you guys as well. So, ranking the top five quarterbacks that are still remaining in the playoffs. So obviously the four teams in the AFC could consider the quarterbacks that won yesterday or a quarterback that's playing tonight. So, I think the way that I looked at it is kind of just like how I see the players as they are now. This isn't necessarily, oh, based on what they've accomplished, and like how I see them all time, kind of just like how I see them in terms of the quarterbacks that they are. So, number one, I think is pretty easy for me. Patrick Mahomes, I think, still the best quarterback in the league, and I think, really is kind of the best any way that you look at it. Really good in clutch situations. I think really good with, his ability to improvise and make plays with his legs. Yeah, I mean, it's not the biggest Chiefs fan in the world, obviously. I think just given their, old rivalry with the Patriots, but you got to admit he's a gamer and is a guy that plays through anything. So he's going to be my number one. Number two, got to have Lamar Jackson. I think given his kind of lack of playoff success, it's hard for me to take him all the way seriously in the playoffs, but was really good Saturday night. Obviously, he's a two-time MVP and could possibly be in contention for his third MVP, but I think second best quarterback in the AFC just ahead of Josh Allen. I still think Josh Allen's a little bit erratic still, but I think Lamar Jackson, just his ability to run and throw and how accurate he's been this year, I think gives him the nod over Allen. He's got the two MVPs and probably should have a third this season. I do feel like Josh Allen may get the MVP this year. Frankly, probably should have caught it last year, but Lamar's been unbelievable, and I think he's even more dangerous with the addition of Derrick Henry this season. So Lamar Jackson, I think, number two for me. Josh Allen, number three. Jalen Hurts is number four for me. Just really like the way that he plays, good leadership. And I think, if he's healthy, I think gives the Eagles the best chance to win the NFC and the Super Bowl. Honestly, if they get there, I really like their team. But I think for him, I think he's easily number one quarterback in the NFC at the moment, given all the guys that are still alive. Matthew Stafford, number five for me, Super Bowl champion, really consistent. As a guy that still can do it at a high level, even despite being in the league for almost 15 years at this point. I think he's shown that he can still be a very good elite level quarterback. So he's my number five, and then honorable mentions. Jared Goff is a guy that I've really liked what he's done the last couple of years in Detroit. I think he's been, pretty consistent throughout his career, but I think being helped by a lot of really good talent in Detroit, has him as a guy that you can believe can lead that Detroit team deep into the playoffs, hopefully to the Super Bowl. See what happens. But honorable mention for me, and then Jaden Daniels, great season he's had. I thought was really good last night against Tampa, so he's another honorable mention. So hopefully it's a good top five for everybody, and hopefully we're all enjoying the playoffs here. So we'll continue tonight with the final wild card game, and then divisional games will take place next weekend. So I think that's going to do it for me this week. Everybody, have a great rest of your week, and we got a great guest Friday for you guys later this week. So stay tuned for that. So we'll talk to you then.